And it is a Thursday time to talk to the voice of the KU Jayhawks, Brian Haney. The Jayhawks fresh off of wins against the Wildcats and the Wildcats, Kentucky and Lexington on Saturday. And then, of course, the big win against K-State on Tuesday. And, Brian, you couldn't ask for a better two-game stretch for KU to get back on track.
Yeah, no doubt. Been a great stretch. And as you and I were just discussing off the air, this next two-game stretch, even tougher based on the rankings. But given where we were at, having lost three in a row, you head into these next two more confident than we did the last two because we've now got a little bit of that mojo back and momentum. And so, even though Kentucky was unranked at the time we beat them, I kind of feel like these last two Wildcat contests that Kansas came out with wins in, will really set them up for hopefully returning to form and looking like the Kansas team that we thought they were for the first 2.5 months of the season. And so, to get your mojo back, where you're playing from out in front again, where you're having a chance to put teams away, where you're assertive and aggressive at all five spots offensively and not just deferring to Jalen Wilson and standing by watching him do his thing, that's the brand of Kansas basketball that I think Kansas can, prove to be a one seed or at worst a very high two seed in the NCAA tournament with. It's not what we were starting to see during that losing skid where they look like a one- or two-trick pony that was kind of lost and searching for answers in other spots. So very happy to see that return, and it really has a lot to do with KJ, DeJuan, and Kevin as much as anything.
I want to talk about Kevin McCullough because I've told you before on the show, I think he is a glue player. I think he does a lot of the dirty stuff, dirty work that you need on a team to be successful. And I know he had a bad stretch there. He didn't score against K-State in Manhattan. He didn't score any points. He fouled out with 5.5 to go. He didn't play great against TCU. And I've seen people that are talking like, why isn't MJ Rice playing instead of Kevin McCullough, which I just start laughing. I'm like, tell me you don't know basketball without telling me you don't know basketball. Because I see what happens when MJ comes out on the floor and he really needs to improve defensively. That stands out tremendously with MJ Rice. And I'm not trying to knock the young kid. I know he's very talented and I think he'll figure it out. But Kevin McCullough, to me, I mean, listen, it's obvious that they do not win the game at Kentucky without Kevin McCullough. And he goes down with a bad ankle sprain and he barely can walk off the court. He comes back. Not only does he come back, He helps out on Oscar Tshiebwe inside, making a couple of turnovers and steals. And then he hits probably the biggest shot of the game with the shot clock down to one. He drills a three-pointer. Just talk about McCullough and how important he is to this team. And maybe, I think there's many people that underappreciate what he truly brings to this team.
Yeah, no doubt. He's one of those guys that is as elite a defender as you'll see in the Big 12 Conference. I'm one of the top 15 defensive players in college basketball, as evidenced by the Naismith Defensive Player of the Year Award. And when you think about that, you look immediately at his individual defensive stats, but that doesn't tell the whole story. Obviously, he leads the league in steals. He'll get an occasional block shot. He's been great on the glass of late with 7 double-doubles. When Bill Self talks about what's magnificent about Kevin McCullough, he talks about a guy who's so good on that end that he covers the sins and mistakes of two or three teammates on one trip down the floor defensively. His presence and the way that he'll take over one side of the floor can really help this Kansas team beyond simply one-on-one matchups. And that's where he doesn't necessarily show up in the box score, but he forces teams into bad shots just with his anticipation, with his presence, his ability to cover multiple guys. He is such a gifted defender. And then when he's hunting his shot offensively and has more of a killer instinct as opposed to the guy that we saw versus TCU that was very passive and didn't even look up at the rim when he caught the ball outside of 15 feet, that's a guy that looks like a complete player. That's a guy who looks like, a second-team All-Big 12 type talent and a guy that, some people have in the second round of NBA mock drafts. So to see him kind of get that swagger back offensively, I think that was huge for Kevin. And we always need him to be active in his true Kevin McCullough fashion defensively, because when he's bringing that, that's the weapon that we really thought Kansas was getting when they had their pick of a couple of transfer portal guys and landed on McCullough first because they thought he was a game-changing defensive player. And we're seeing that more and more. You saw it, in the Kentucky game. you see it on the glass at 6'5". You know, he's in there being our leading rebounder the last couple of nights when we've gone up against teams that are really good on the glass and longer than we are. I mean, Kentucky was plus 13 in boards in their four-game win streak and number three nationally in offensive rebound percentage, and he goes in there and gets a double-double on a bad ankle. So he's doing a lot of things that help this Kansas team, some of which are tangible and trackable. Others you just have to appreciate Ball to fully see and recognize, because he covers for a lot of guys with his presence, and that, I think, is what Bill Self appreciates the most about him.
No doubt. He's a coach's best friend in many ways. And of course, I'd be remiss if I didn't address Jalen Wilson. I mean, dear goodness. I know they're 2-3 during his five-game stretch, but Jalen Wilson, I mean, against Kentucky, just watching the shots that he hit that kept KU in front when Kentucky was making it close, I mean, his outside shot has improved so much. His free throw shooting is so much better. And I know him and Agbaji are different players, but there are similarities from the standpoint of he found out, he got the feedback, what he needs to do to be a draft pick or to enhance his status for the NBA and to be the alpha dog on the team. And Ochai was last year, of course. And when the game was on the line, they went to Ochai. And there's no doubt when the game's on the line, they're looking for Jalen Wilson. But what about this five-game stretch where there had been times he's just simply put the team on his back?
Well, it's the largest scoring five-game stretch since the inception of the Big 12 by a Kansas Jayhawk, 133 points. And it started with the 38 and then the 30 versus Kansas State and TCU, but those came in defeats. You know, now you're seeing Kansas figure out a winning formula where he still is the alpha that sets the tone early, that takes big shots late, but you're getting him help throughout the rest of the game. And I thought he was a calming presence for Kansas in Kentucky when we did not get off to a super fast start in the first 5 minutes. You know, he found a way to put his head down and get a couple of shots to fall. And you could just see him in the huddle calming the guys. He's more of a vocal leader than we probably have with anybody else on this team. I don't think that's DeJuan's natural gift. But with Jalen, you have lead by example and vocal leadership. And so those are tremendous attributes to have in your senior alpha. But many of my friends that watch Kansas closely feel like his current season is better than what Ochai Agbaji did in his senior year. Now, obviously, Ochai tailed off for about a month where he really struggled with the shot and got it back, you know, late in Chicago versus Miami. But, you know, prior to that, Ochai was, you know, doing things that had him very much in the thick of the National Player of the Year conversation. Well, Jalen's there right now, and at the mid-season point, he was several national media pundits picked to win the award. He then went for about a three-game swoon where the efficiency wasn't great, but it wasn't some of the struggles like Ochai had. You know, this is a guy that's had five straight 20-plus point games and just continues to dazzle us with his double-figure numbers. To me, you know, Ochai started to lose his grasp on the national candidacy when Oscar Tshiebwe came into Lawrence and outshined Agbaji and the Jayhawks and won that head-to-head National Player of the Year battle. Well, Jalen just got that one in his back pocket on Saturday. Not that one game determines that, but I think it clearly catapults him a few notches up. And if Kansas can go on to win the Big 12 and finish as a one seed, you'd be hard-pressed to find a guy, you know, that is boasting what Jalen Wilson is right now. So I think he's on the short list of about two or three guys right now. But the recent five-game stretch, to me, more than makes up for the little three games of a slight step back to open league play. And that's when he was a really marked man and had to adjust to that. And let me tell you, now that KJ and Kevin and DeJuan are being more aggressive offensively, you might think that would hurt Jalen and his numbers, but it's actually going to help him because it forces the opposition to not key so heavily on Wilson. You truly have to play Kansas straight up, and it's going to make shots easier to come by for Jalen. It's going to make Kansas a better team. And so much of winning that award is not just the individual numbers, but also the team success. You'll recall, you know, Frank Mason had Kansas as one of the best teams in America when he was averaging his 20 points a game back in 2017. And so I think Jalen is very much projecting toward that right now as we head into the final month of the regular season. Just got to keep him coming but also more than anything, keep those wins coming for Kansas.
No doubt about it. Brown-handed voice of the Jayhawks brought to you each and every Thursday here on The Ticket by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Becky, 118 North Mill and Beloit, or call them today at 738-5701. You mentioned Juan. He had 18 points, tying a career high. He was huge, of course, hit a big three when K-State was trying to make a run there late in the game. McCullough, 16 and 13. Before we talk about the Big 12 race and a look at Iowa State and Texas, it's funny, there's K-State fans I know, and I don't think it has any impact on it, but they were talking about, we want KU to beat Kentucky because we don't want KU to have a four-game losing streak when they play us. And I'm like, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think it mattered if KU beat Kentucky or lost to Kentucky. They were going to be extremely up and ready for K-State. Now, I do think it obviously helps confidence-wise for KU to have beaten Kentucky and get a little mojo back, as you used in your own words. And because, you know, if you lose four in a row, any team's going to have a little bit of self-doubt going to pop in. I mean, it's only natural that that happens. So it was important to beat Kentucky. But whether they lost or won against Kentucky, there's no doubt that KU is going to be up and ready for Kansas State. What were you hearing after the Kentucky game? Because obviously it was a great win and you're feeling good about yourself, but at the same time, I know the players had circled the rematch against K-State.
Yeah, I think that above all, KU was motivated by the fact that they felt like they gave that one away in Manhattan. And no matter what had transpired since then, with two more defeats than a Kentucky victory, or had they won all three, they were chomping at the bit to avenge the K-State game because they felt like they should have, could have, would have won it. And they had the ball in a tie game on the final possession, turned it over. Had the ball down one on the final possession of overtime, turned it over. And DeJuan Harris typically never does those things. And so they really felt like they left money on the table, so to speak. And you could point to the court storming and the dancing on the tables and the head coach grabbing the microphone and all that stuff as motivation. And say, did that, you know, possibly fuel the fire for Kansas? I don't know that it did any more than just the fact that they felt like they let one slip away and they were just looking at themselves in the mirrors and saying, that one's on us. So, you know, the fact that we beat Kentucky, I think if anything helped Kansas on Tuesday night because we had a little more mojo and momentum back, to quote Bill Self directly. And so I think it would have been just as fired up a team had they come in having lost four in a row versus having just won one, because the real motivation lied in the form of letting one get away that, for all intents and purposes, Kansas felt like they should have won.
Yep, that makes sense to me. All right, the Big 12 race. Holy shnikes. You and I talked about last week, but it just continues to be tight. Texas, first place, 7-2. Four teams now tied at 6-3. KU, K-State, TCU, and Iowa State. And then there's Baylor lurking at 5-4. And then, of course, KU, after winning against K-State and Kentucky, as you mentioned earlier, technically this is a harder two-game stretch coming up against Iowa State on the road coming up on Saturday at 11 a.m., which you can hear on Z96.3 The Lake, and then hosting Texas coming up on Monday, Big Monday on February the 6th. And if KU wins these two games, they clearly will be in first place in the Big 12 after having played 11 with seven to go. How do you look at this race right now at the halfway point where it looks like five teams, maybe even six, could possibly win it or get a share? And then the importance, of course, of these games. If you can go steal one in Ames against Iowa State, that's a step up compared to most people in this league. Is Iowa State, they're still undefeated at home, aren't they?
I have to look at their home versus road splits. They've got three losses. So where was their third besides Lubbock and Allen Fieldhouse? We'd have to look that up.
I will look that up.
But yeah, the league race has never been this close. It's never been to where you had six teams with a legitimate shot, five of which that are one game away from each other, five of which are all in the top 20. I mean, it's crazy. Really, all six are, if you include Baylor's two games back. And it's wild to think, you know, that this weekend K-State's going to turn around and play Texas. KU's, you know, got a chance to beat Iowa State. You could be back in first place by the end of this weekend, or you could be two games back and in desperation mode again. Not that Tuesday night was desperation, but had KU lost to K-State, you would have had a two-game deficit, and even though you still get to play Texas twice, you would have really felt like, you know, you're fighting an uphill battle. good news is for anybody in that top six, there's going to be enough cannibalism where they eat up on each other that you know, you're going to have some moving and shaking going on. But for Kansas to get the inside pole position, if you could win in Ames and obviously hold serve on Monday night in Lawrence versus Texas, you could see a real shift where suddenly the Jayhawks are the team to beat. But to think that the schedule lets up after that, that may have been the perception a couple of weeks ago, but then you watch Oklahoma almost beat Alabama by 30,
yeah,
and you realize that on any given night, you know, that next game going down to Norman, that could be just as tough as the previous stretch of eight. And so it's definitely a situation where Kansas would like to get back out in front to where they've got a game of separation, knowing that their last game of the year, they can close it out with a senior day versus Texas Tech that you'd like your chances in, having won the senior days for four straight decades. But you also, at the end of those schedule in the final week, have to go to Austin. So that's where, you know, you'd like to have a one-game lead heading into the last week because you'd have a little bit of margin for error and allow for a slip-up. If you don't take care of business here in these next couple and you're trailing by a game, suddenly, you know, that's where everything's must win down the stretch. And so it's going to be a really interesting stretch run here. And I think that, you know, we talked a week ago about Ken Pom having a forecast of four teams at 11-7. I don't think it comes to that, but there's still a great high percentage chance there's a three-way tie this year. And Kansas, as selfish Jayhawk fans with 63 conference championships and 17 of them in the last 20 years and way more than K-State had before 1988, regardless of what the head coach is saying over there. We want to win this thing outright. KU doesn't want to share it with anybody. And so Jayhawks realize they've got a golden opportunity to grab that inside position starting on Saturday in Ames.
Iowa State is 11-0 at home. Their three losses in conference are by two at Oklahoma State, by two at Lawrence at Allard Fieldhouse, and then recently they blew a 23-point lead at Lubbock and lost in overtime by three. So Iowa State's combined three losses in conference play on the road are by combined 7 points. So no doubt KU's going to have to earn it going up to Ames. K-State went to Ames recently and fell by four. And I hear KU fans a lot of times go, oh, no, Ames, we always have problems up there. I'm like, well, I remember back in the heyday Kansas did, but I'm not remembering KU having like tons of issues with Iowa State and Ames. They're always tough games, don't get me wrong, but it seems like KU, more often than not under Bill Self, has been able to find ways to win up in Ames.
Yeah, I think you know, last year was a classic example. You're without Ochai Agbaji, and you're able to go up there and get a win and do so shorthanded where other guys stepped up, and it wasn't the hostile atmosphere and environment that Hilton Magic, you know, has been in previous years. This year it will be. This year they're both top 20 teams, but we really thought it would be more of a test last year when Kansas had won on a game winner by DeJuan Harris, you know, in last-second fashion. And, you know, Kansas went up there and handled business. They've had more good days up there than not, you know, in the recent stretch of Bill Self era, and here's hoping tomorrow is that. But I think the thing that Kansas fans need to remember is when Iowa State just lost a week ago, you know, to the Missouri Tigers, they were resting an injured Caleb Grill. He'll be back. He was the Mays Kansas product that had a chance, you know, at the last second three at the top and just rimmed off, and they'll certainly be out for revenge. So it's going to be a great test, and I like our chances, but we certainly wouldn't be surprised by anything at this point in a league this good.
So true. All right, time for the off-the-wall question. I was trying to sit here and think, going into the Chiefs-Bengals game on Sunday night, I just did not have good feeling about it at all, and luckily I ate crow in my prediction and everything else on Monday. By the way, crow is really good when you have it cooked medium well, and then you mix it with some side dishes of green beans and some potato casserole. It's really good stuff. So I ate some crow on Monday, which was fine. I was happy to be wrong. But I was just really tight, nervous. I didn't feel good about the game. So the off-the-wall question for you, and it could be from a fan perspective or it could be from a play-by-play announcer perspective, what game stands out to you where you were extremely nervous or you were really concerned and worried, and odds are it was probably a very important game, whether it's the AFC title game that I referred to here recently, but is there a game where you just went in, you're like, man, I just am not feeling it tonight, and you're nervous, you're anxious, you're apprehensive covering a team, or just simply going to cheer for your favorite squad?
Wow. So just any game where we were especially nervous?
Well, just a game where you were just really uptight, maybe. You were not comfortable. It worried you more than most games would.
Man, that's a tough one. You know, all of these, you know, we
every game this year, right?
I mean, it's funny. Like, people don't think that. I think a lot of Kansas fans only care about the postseason, and the regular season is about, you know, putting yourself in the best position for Selection Sunday. But to be honest, those of us inside of the program take pride in saying we're the flag carrier for the Big 12. I mean, if Self could win it this year, it would be 17 Big 12 championships in 20 years.
Crazy.
So I sweat bullets on all of these. And when you go in as the hunted, as the team that, you know, and this is not meant to sound braggadocious about Kansas basketball, it's just fact. I mean, this is the sellout game on any opposing road venue's home slate for venues that don't typically sell out.
Yes.
This is the game they raise the ticket prices for. This is the game that they have the special whiteouts or blackouts or whatever with the fans because they want to beat Kansas. And so you always feel like you get everybody's best shot. And when you're trying to protect that top perch in a year where it's as much for grabs as it's ever been, you know, we sweat them all. But no doubt, I think that, you know, some of the NCAA tournament games where I feel like there was a perceived advantage for Kansas and you better not screw this up. Like Villanova, for example, you know, in the Final Four last year where they had just lost one of their key players the game before.
Yeah.
And fresh in our minds was 2018 where they beat us with all those threes in San Antonio. It just felt like such a golden opportunity. Miami, the game before, felt like such a golden opportunity to take on a double-digit seed in an Elite Eight, and you just don't want to see Kansas screw it up. So
yeah,
there's plenty of examples, but as confident as we always are, as blue blood, we care so dang much that there's always going to be anxiety and a pit in our stomach in some of these high-level games.
Well, I have a friend says, listen, it's the ultimate sign of respect when you want KU to lose so badly from the other side. And he explained it. He says, listen, KU is the Yankees of college basketball. Now, a lot of people have said Duke was, and maybe Duke still is, but I think Duke, Kentucky, and Kansas, I mean, those are the three main blue bloods. I know Carolina you can throw in there too, certainly, but there's a vile and there's a hatred towards Duke. There's a vile and some contempt towards Kentucky and to Kansas, and I think all three of those schools usually get everybody's best shot, which is the equivalent of kind of the Yankees in Major League Baseball.
Maybe so. Your friend's a K-State fan, though, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think the rest of the country hates Kansas like some of their rivals do to the east and to the west.
Yeah.
But I totally get where you're coming from when you talk about being in contention every year and all of that, you know, doing as well as they do in recruiting. And then, obviously, the Adidas narrative fuels the fire for rivals to the east and the west. But it's interesting to hear the Yankees comparison because I hadn't thought of it that way.
Yeah.
You know, living in Texas, you know, they certainly didn't like the fact that Kansas won every year, but there wasn't like this, you know, Steinbrenner and $200 million payroll and whatever
right.
hatred that most baseball fans have toward the Yankees. But that's interesting. But also interesting that I could predict where your buddy, you know, typically
yeah.
lies his loyalty.
Right. And if KU won, and, you know, not trying to knock KU, but if KU won as many national titles during the stretch that Coach K did, I think they would obviously be more vile, and I would dare say the word hatred towards KU, because we're seeing it with the Chiefs right now. And Tom Brady and the Patriots went through it, and we're seeing it with the Chiefs now with Mahomes. There's all these people wanting to hate on Mahomes or pick on stuff with the Chiefs because they're tired of the Chiefs winning already after five straight AFC title games and all the appearances. And like I said, it's a gigantic compliment. When you're cheering for the Yankees to lose so bad and you tend to forget about your team that isn't very good, or they're having a good year and you're always worried about what's happening to the Yankees, or you're always worried about, well, my team won, but did Duke lose? Okay, that made my day that Duke lost. It's a major compliment, actually, to the opposing team. Would you buy that?
Yeah, I mean, the famous quote, fans don't boo nobodies, right?
Right.
So, I mean, they don't like you because you're doing something good, and that's definitely where Kansas has been. So that's a great comparison.
Absolutely. Well, we appreciate your time as always, man. Two more great games on the docket coming up tomorrow morning in Ames and then Monday at home against Lawrence. We look forward to recapping those and looking ahead to more tough games of Big 12 with you next Thursday, Brian. Thanks for the time as always.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate you. We'll talk to you soon.
Take care. Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, brought to you each and every Thursday by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Becky at 118 North Millen Boulevard, or call them at 738-5701.